I noted that we're having this Mass at an unusual time for us. It's the middle of the day, which means we've been doing something already, and whatever that is, our work, our chores, our attending to the needs of our families, that becomes part of what is, it affects what we ponder. In my case, I was at a business meeting this morning, which is why we couldn't have the Mass at the regular time. Well, dealing with business is connected to the readings today, and also the reading yesterday, where the two disciples were asking for seats of honor. But let's start for now with this selection from the Paul's letter to the Ephesians. We've been reading from this letter for a few days. It's a beautiful reflection on the Christian life, really, and the wonder of the Christian life. And in this case, Paul makes a kind of before and after comparison. You know that's a common thing in advertising. You show the before picture. Here's the house before it was painted, before it was fixed up, or before the landscape was done. It's ugly and messed, dilapidated. And then they show the after picture. Oh, what a beautiful change has taken place. How wonderful it is that whatever moved it from before to after is really worth the money. Or sometimes those programs that advertise weight loss, they say, well, here's a person who was grossly overweight and couldn't fit into his clothes. And then he went through this process or went on this diet or did whatever. And then now look, he's trim and fit and handsome and his clothes look great. And so therefore, you should also buy into the program. So you know before and after. Well, when it comes to the spiritual life, we may have a tendency to think that the before is this life and the after is the next life, heaven. And that's true to some extent. Of course, there's a big difference between our experience here and our experience in the next life. But St. Paul points out that's not really the before and after picture. The before is when we were living according to the desires of the flesh, when we were living in disobedience to God. And the after is when we accept what God has already done for us. We accept the blessing that has already been won for us by Jesus Christ. So that means we're already in the after stage, even now. It's true, this is a typical style of Paul, where he speaks about the already and the not yet. We are already saved. We have already received the abundant riches of grace, but we have not yet fully cooperated. We have not yet fully seen what has been given to us. So there's this already and not yet. But in this reading, he stresses what has already happened. By grace, we are saved already. You might remember the passage a couple of days ago where in the beginning of the letter to the Ephesians, where Paul speaks about that we have been chosen in Christ before the foundation of the world, and we have been given every spiritual blessing in the heavens. That's already happened. We are already blessed. And you could say, in that sense, we are already in heaven. That's a faith perspective. Doesn't look like it, but that's the truth. That's where we are. Because that's where God already sees us. He sees the completion of the process in us. In fact, he saw it before he even created us. So this is why it says at the end of the reading, we are his handiwork created in Christ Jesus for good works that God has prepared in advance that we should live in them. And God prepared in advance how we could cooperate with him. It's all done by him, but we have to cooperate. So it's a good way to understand our life, and it prevents us from falling into the kinds of traps that are so common in everybody. Just think of the two disciples yesterday, James and John. They wanted to have, you know, seats of glory. If they understood their call and who was speaking to them, they would have realized they already have a place of honor. They're already chosen as apostles. They're already following him. They're acting as if they're waiting for some greater gift to be given. It's already given, but they just couldn't see it. And so they're focusing on earthly advantages, earthly glory. And this is typical of us. We tend to exaggerate the importance of what is earthly, meaning not that important, and we minimize or even forget what's supremely important, our union with God and the victory of Jesus Christ, which has already saved us. Well, that's related to what happened in today's gospel as well. In the gospel, a man asks Jesus to help him get a just share of his inheritance from his brother, which is a just request. It's not a bad thing to seek just distribution of an inheritance. It's not like the man is, at least as far as we can tell from the request, it's not as if he's making an evil choice or he's dominated by greed. But to our surprise, Jesus does not does not enter into the issue. Who appointed me as your judge? Why are you putting me in this position of sorting out these lesser matters? And then, again, to our surprise, instead of saying to the man's brother, okay, be just and fair with your brother, he says to everybody, the whole crowd, take care to guard against all greed. To guard against all greed. Don't let your desire for money and possessions distort your understanding of what's really important. He says, for though one may be rich, one's life does not consist of possessions. So even if you get a fair distribution of the inheritance, even if you have a great amount of money, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have welcomed the real gift offered us in grace. It doesn't mean you're prepared for eternal glory. And that's why he tells the parable of this rich man who's even richer because he has an abundant harvest, and yet he is a fool. And that's what God says to him, you fool. Why is he a fool? Not because he has an abundant harvest. He's not a fool because he's a rich man. He's a fool because he thinks that possessing that richness, of holding on to or storing up those earthly goods, is going to provide a long, happy, satisfying life for him. That's a very foolish way of thinking. And in this case, the reason why he's a fool is because he's going to die that very night. So all that stuff he stored up, what good is it to him now? But even if he wasn't going to die, this is a thing I want to connect to St. Paul's point. Even if he wasn't going to die, even if he lived a long life with all his possessions, it's not those possessions that are going to really satisfy his longing for life and for glory, because they can't. They can't. Earthly possessions don't make us happy. They don't provide for us what we really long for. Only God and his grace provides for us. So here's the man. He has his abundant harvest. He decides to store it all up. Now, like I say, it's not wrong to be prudent in caring for your possessions. But it's wrong to think that possessions are going to provide you with lasting happiness. They won't. No matter how long we live and no matter how long we keep them. Eventually, of course, we will die and have to give them up. But even while we have them, a lot of times possessions are more of a burden than a blessing. Sometimes very wealthy people are so worried about their money, they're so concerned about the proper use or preservation of their money, that they don't even enjoy it. You know cases of this. So what is it? It's that lack of the eternal perspective. And this is what Jesus says at the end of the gospel. Thus it will be, for the one who stores up treasure for himself, meaning earthly treasure, but is not rich in what matters to God. Storing up treasure for oneself, ultimately, is a waste of time, if not an evil, because it's often done that people store up treasure to the disadvantage of those in need. That's where sin comes in. But even without that aspect, it's foolish, because we don't become rich in what matters to God. Go back to James and John yesterday, and they wanted to have glory. One had seats at the right and at the left of Jesus in glory. Well, what is that? But even if they had that, What good would it do then? Much more important to have a seat in glory in heaven. And that's what Jesus had in store for his apostles and for all of us. So let us not lose our perspective. Perhaps I'm thinking about this a lot, this earthly and heavenly perspective, because as I say, today my day began with a business meeting, and so it's our annual business meeting, and you have to deal with a lot of matters. It was a pretty good meeting, actually. We talked about the life of the community and the different things going on in the United States and here. And there's a lot of beautiful, first of all, a lot of beautiful people who are following the Anuam Way, and that's always encouraging, and lots of the spirit is good. But of course, in a business meeting, you also have to go over the financial reports. And that's the part we're not very good at. Anuim is the poor of God, and even if there's money, we don't understand exactly what all those numbers mean and how they all add up. That's the necessary drag on our meetings. But on the other hand, it's not that important to us, you know, as long as we're not wasting what has been given to us, and we're not being imprudent in the way we're using or distributing the funds. Well, okay, I'm not going to hang my happiness on a financial report, and I don't think anyone in the meeting was going to lose any sleep over the financial report. Well, good, because what good is it to store up treasure for ourselves, or even for our community, or even for our ministry, and not become rich in what matters to God? So much more important to be here at the Mass, much more important to spend time in prayer than to figure out the financial report. And that's a perspective that frees us from a lot of the troubling things that preoccupy us throughout the day. Let's return to what it means to be rich in what matters to God, because, as St. Paul has said, we are already rich. We have already received every spiritual blessing in the heavens, and that's where the focus of our heart should always be.